Sports, news, and entertainment covered with some middle ground common sense right here with the Smart Guys.
And they are Charles Walshine, foreclosure defense attorney extraordinaire. You can go to the website and check it all out. Walshine Legal. That's with two L's, by the way. S-H-E-I-N. WalshineLegal.com. Stephen Schwartz, businessman, aficionado, entrepreneur extraordinaire in his own right. StevieGreen.com. Check everything out on the Twitter page. Three Smart Guys. At Three Smart Guys. And Mr. Woods, make sure I had that right. Probably botched that up. And also a big event happening in the world of my good friend, Mr. Schwartz. He's got his sweatshirts debuting today. That's right. Hoodies opening day. MrDumbull.com. That's D-U-M-B-U-L-L.com. And, of course, the handing out of the coveted Bronze Attorney Award for those who have stepped in it. And we will tell you the nominees from last week who won and what is presented for the upcoming. We say a very good morning to Charles and Steve. Guys, good morning. How are you both?
Good morning, Jay.
Hey, Jay. How are you?
How are you? All is good here. All is good. We got a lot to go over, including what's happening right now. You had the closing arguments yesterday, the Chauvin trial, gentlemen. Interesting to note, I kind of stepped out of the room, came back, because I saw that Eric Nelson was talking to the judge in the case, Peter Cahill, and basically citing, you know, all the surrounding stuff, hard to keep this jury immune of all that's going on, and really kind of asked for a mistrial. And, of course, it didn't help beloved Congresswoman Maxine Waters opening her mouth as far as fanning flames, time to get confrontational, paraphrasing if the verdict doesn't go the way of the people, meaning a murder charge here, murder two. So in essence, we've got a lot happening, and today could be a very big day, Charles, in the system of justice and this country, something we have not seen, as I have stated, in, you know, nearly 26 years. Of course, the verdict happening in the O.J. trial, getting underway June 94, coming through with the verdict October 95. We haven't seen anything like this or since that trial concluded back 25 and a half years ago. So in essence, what did you think as far as the statement from Waters, what Cahill said is possibly a loophole as far as overturning this trial and the verdict by way of a mistrial? Yeah, I mean, what did you think of those comments? That was startling beyond to me from Peter Cahill yesterday. What were your thoughts?
Well, it's absurd because, you know, does it matter that Maxine Waters is saying it because she's a congressman or because it's being said at all? The fact is that everybody's talking about this stuff. And it went back to the very beginning of the trial where they were talking about where the venue was going to be. So it's sort of nuts. Like, I don't know how they put the two and two together, because the reason you would get a mistrial is because it's somehow the jury was tainted. Not the evidence, not the testimony, that the jury's opinion was tainted because of what some public official says. But public officials are subject to the same First Amendment rights as everybody else. They can say whatever they want, anytime they want. The question is, you know, does it taint the jury? Well, the jury technically isn't even supposed to be watching the news. So I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Just complete mystery to me. There's a complete disconnect there. I don't get it.
I don't know. I mean, Steve, I look back on January 6th. I mean, Trump had a rally. We had an insurrection at the Capitol at 1 o'clock in the afternoon with what Maxine Waters said. Did she fan flames? Possible confrontation if the verdict doesn't go the way that it should, according to many. Isn't that kind of almost rounding up the troops a la January the 6th? That's what came into my mindset. I don't know about yours. What did you think?
Absolutely, Jay. That's exactly what came into my mind. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, I guess. You know, I mean, if you're going to sit there and talk about, Trump doing all his things, which, believe me, two wrongs don't make a right. But the difference in this case is that they have this one. I don't understand this part. The world is on their side. There's no reason to act like Trump. There's no reason in the world to have made that move. It's a horrible move, and it's a bad look, because whether you're white, black, green, yellow, blue, I don't care what you are, who you are, everybody. I haven't heard anybody really come out and say, really defending this cop in any way. I don't even know how you can, because the evidence is so overwhelming. And we've been over it all the time. I mean, every network has covered this from left to right, all the way through. And we all agree that the cops and the guys in blue are the heroes. But this guy wasn't a cop. This guy was a murderer. So for her, she's almost cheapened the act. She's almost, by coming out, she's only hurt her own constituents. She's only hurt her own movements. She's only hurt her own causes. So what she did was, she's committed, in a lot of ways, political suicide, in a way. Because either way you look at this, they have fought the good fight all the way through. And she has gone overboard in her past. She has gone way overboard, okay? And now she's on the winning side. And this is the way she acts? Totally unacceptable.
Despicable, it really is. Charles, I mean, she is fan flames here. And like I said, I make the correlation. Listen, I hope it doesn't come that way. So, in essence, do you think we will get a verdict today, Charles Walshine? And if so, what do you think is labeled as far as Chauvin is concerned?
Well, there's three charges that goes from serious, from murder to all the way down to a basically your garden variety manslaughter charge. I think they're going for the middle one. I think they're going for manslaughter too, or maybe manslaughter.
You're going for manslaughter, huh?
Get the murder too. That's what I think, because the defense, the defense did a pretty good job is putting into reasonable doubt, not as to what he did, because there's a video, the 929 there, so you can't argue with that. Question is what their contributing factors, et cetera, et cetera. Would he have been dead in 10 minutes? It's like maybe a little bit of doubt, not in my mind, by the way, but maybe in somebody on the jury who feels sorry for police officers in general, doesn't particularly like the kind of person that Floyd was. A lot of things go through juries' minds. And I don't think the prosecution did a particularly great job of arming the people in the jury, the people who were, who wanted to give the top charge, convicted the top charge, the ammunition to convince the other jurors who may not have been so sure, because that's pretty much what goes on in a jury trial. When you're giving your summation, your final, what you do is you want to give the people who are on your side the most ammunition to convince the others to go your way. And he didn't do that. He kind of dropped the ball at the very end. But at the end of the day, there's going to be a conviction. There's no question about it. The only real question is what's going to be the public reaction when they don't convict at the top charge. The country's going to go completely bananas.
Second degree.
Again, Maxine Waters fanning the flames. Can you just shut your mouth? Do you understand what's going on here? Really, do you want the whole country burned down? Really, is that what you want? Can you just shut your mouth for 2 minutes? Really?
And it's interesting because I was flipping channels last night and I see Val Demings and she was asked about this and she had the gall, unmitigated gall, Steve, to bring up Donald Trump. Now, what does Donald Trump have to do with what Waters said yesterday? I mean, we go back now to January 6th automatically when we ask a Democrat who cannot have total condemnation over the words of Maxine Waters, we have to go back to the old days now? And this is typical, though, in my estimation, of what goes on here. Because you cannot embrace one iota of what Maxine Waters said yesterday. Yet Val Demings said yesterday, you know what? Let's bring up, let's go back to the Trump days. Let's go back 3 months. Incredible to me. So, in essence, you know what? Everybody should be condemning right now because this is such an important moment in my in our country. I mean, everybody has to come down on Maxine Waters right now. No, Steve?
How easy would have it been for Maxine Waters just to let it all play out? She has the winning ticket. That's the part that's so disturbing in this, is that if I was a real, you know, person who was passionate about politics and passionate about, you know, what's happened in this country over the last 4 years, the last person I'd want to ever name, I'd ever want to bring up would be Donald Trump. It would be something that you'd want to move as far away from as possible. We all understand that Trump did some good things. He was, you know, but he was definitely the wrong messenger. He was not able to you know, unite people. Maxine Waters is going out of her way to destroy everything that everyone has worked for to get to this point. Nobody can be so happy with her. Nobody behind closed doors. Maybe out in public that you want to you know, keep up some sort of a persona. But other than that, listen, you hit it right on the head, Jay. I mean, this decision is too important for her to cheapen the whole act. And Charlie's right, because this country is ready to go bananas, absolutely bananas. And that top charge doesn't get taken, there will be all kinds of craziness going on, and a lot of it has to do with comments that were made by Maxine Waters.
No doubt, Stephen Charles, we are the smart guys, ladies and gentlemen. Now, again, just to reiterate to the audience, second-degree intentional murder, that carries, 40 years, Charles, right? 40 years in prison. Third degree is 25 years. And second-degree manslaughter, 10 years. So sentencing guidelines call for far less time, including 12 and a half years on either murder count. So, in essence, that's what you're getting here. And again, each charge is treated separately. So you can have, you know, a situation where he gets third-degree murder as well as manslaughter, second-degree manslaughter. So you can have those charges kind of coincide together, but it would be time on top of time, and that's what it would be. So, listen, my thought process is it's going to come down today. I think if it goes further than today, is there anything in your mindset, Charles, that tells you, unfortunately, we got the word doubt coming into play here with a juror? Could be multiple jurors. But again, all 12 have to agree. You know that better than anyone. Is that the process of thinking one might have if deliberations go even further than today? They're going to get a full day behind closed doors, okay? There's a question and everything else. If it goes beyond the day, is that something to worry about in your estimation?
I'll tell you this: this judge isn't going to say, "Okay, fine, you know, you did 3 days in the jury room. I'm releasing the jury with a not guilty." That's not happening. They're going to hang the jury, and they're going to declare a mistrial and go again. That's what's going to happen.
Steve, what do you think?
You know, Jake. I mean, listen, we all know that if this thing comes down with a not guilty, it's over. You might as well just like have the fire department. Anytime you see a mall, there's a gas station, the country's going to go insane. It's going to make OJ and Rodney King look like a garden party on a Sunday in June. Oh, my God. I don't even want to think about it. And you want to know something? I can't blame them. Anybody that goes out that's outraged by that, I can't blame them. There's something so inherently wrong. Well, this thing should never happen in the first place. This is the worst. If this doesn't change the way policing is approached in this country, I don't know what does. We all know police officers, and you know, last week we said none of us, I don't think, are up to that job. I know I'm not. It's a tough job. They earn their pay every minute of every day. they are truly heroes for what they put themselves through. But it's, listen, it's their choice. Some people, you know, this is what they're calling it.
Yeah.
But,
that's a good segue, Charles.
You know, you don't go to school. You don't go to school to be a cop. You can't. It's on the job training. That means the people that are training you have to be the best of the best of the best. There's going to be mistakes made. Yes, it's unbelievably stressful. I'll tell you one thing: in no way, no uncertain terms, would I ever be the person to want to sit in judgment of a police officer's judgment in a situation that I would never put myself into. It's a rough thing to do, but that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is we first have to say that Chauvin is a bad guy. He's not a good guy that made a mistake like the other shooting. You know, the one in the other shooting in Minneapolis last week, the kid was driving away. This is not that. This is something else. And I really hope that justice is done. And I hope that the country can swallow everybody from one end to the other exactly what justice is needed, because that is the system. That is the process. So without burning the place down, we should move on and make the system a lot better.
You think about it, Charles brings up a decent point, and that's the word training. There seems to be just a lack of it around. And, you know, I look at what's happening in our neck of the woods. Do we have a lot of that stuff happening within the NYPD or even Long Island for that matter? I don't read a lot about that, right? With what goes on in around our country, do we have people who pull people over and shoot them dead, as what happened in Brooklyn Center a couple of weeks ago? Kim Potter, do we have incidents? Now, listen, we have some incidents as far as traffic stops and everything else. There's no question about it. But some of these national cases, the Lieutenant Rosario pulled over in Virginia because they couldn't see his license plate properly. He just bought the car. What, are you kidding me? You're going to put him at gunpoint now? It is unbelievable. And pepper spray the guy to death? He's telling you, he's serving our country, for crying out loud. I mean, is it just a lack thereof? And what's needed is just ongoing training. Even for somebody like Potter, who's been on the force 26 years. I mean, you're pulling out a taser. You think it's a taser, it's your gun. I mean, is that something that we have to look about as far as, you know what, we got to do a lot better here? Not only do we have to vet individuals who want to become police officers, but we have to have ongoing training. And that includes that in the racial category as well, not to prejudge and everything else. You know, we just have to do a better job around this country. And it's interesting, I'm hearing Risco Lewis, who's the deputy commissioner in Suffolk County, made a trip out to Ferguson, the Michael Brown incident of 2014, in order to teach. And maybe that's what's needed right now. You know, maybe we just have to send, we've already had a lot of folks from our area in and around the city who head out to other parts of the country in order to kind of teach what they know, what has worked. Maybe we just have to have ongoing, complete ongoing training, Steve, in that regard.
Yeah, for sure, Jay. Stress and the environment of what's going on is really at an epic point for the men and women in blue. They are up against it in every state in this country. And you never know what that incident's going to take. You never know. It could happen anywhere. But when we talk about training, you're right on, because I think the NYPD is the best in the country, okay, regardless of what. And I think that they are the standard. And then when you go around the country and you go to other places and other states, they're not as well trained as the New York Police Department. And the guys out in Long Island do a great job. New York does a really, really great job. But the stress and the environment can make for really embarrassing bad incidences, even with the best. It's just like Charlie said, it doesn't matter. These guys, you don't know what goes on their personal lives. You don't know what goes on behind closed doors. They're just people like us. They get up in the morning, they have families, they have other pressures, they have other things, and then they got to go and take on the world. It is probably the hardest job right now in America. But here's the part of the Floyd case and that I really don't get, that the guys in blue, we keep talking about, yes, the bad cop, the dirty cop, the murderer cop. But what were the other three guys doing? These guys are supposed to be his brothers in blue. Wouldn't it make sense for one of them, yeah, and the tape is rolling after 9 minutes, 29 seconds, to go over there and say, hey, enough, and then drag him off if you have to? Because you're saving the guy in blue who is completely now in a complete mental, like he's in a mental a state of mind that I don't even know whether or not he knows he's in. It happens all the time. I've spoken to a lot of retired cops where they say, oh, well, this guy got a little bit out of hand, and I had to drag him off, because he's almost saving himself. He's saving the guy. He's saving the unit. He's saving the city. Embarrassment. And when you look at those three, four cops who are standing around during this whole thing and doing nothing, wow. I mean, what does that say about training? You're supposed to have each other's back. It's sort of like, hey, we do a radio show here. You know what? I know that Charlie has my back. I know that, Jay, you have my back, and we have each other's back. And we're friends. We would, you know, we look after each other. Could you imagine if the three of us were in a patrol car? I'd have your back. And if Charlie was a little bit out of control, I would drag Charlie over. I'd say, Charlie, guy's handcuffed. It's enough. One of us should have had a sensibility to sit there and say, enough.
Corsi, two of those guys were trainees, by the way. Were being trained by Chauvin.
Which is even worse.
That's what I'm just saying. That's the problem.
There was another two guys there that weren't, though.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Total, the individual who is standing up, the other two, one was a rookie in that group. Listen, they're all accessories, in my opinion. Tao did nothing. Did nothing. He heard the cries of the civilians right in front. Did nothing, really. He stood there like a statue, pretty much. It's unforgivable. It really is. So, in essence, we await, and that will be. And by the way, you know, Chauvin had 18 complaints against him. Okay, he had 18 flags in his direction as far as not doing the right thing on the job, which baffles him. And, you know, you look at the guy in Chicago who killed the kid with one shot to the chest. This Adam Toledo, 13 years of age, 2:30 in the morning as it was. Gunshots and everything else, the chase in the alley and everything else. Toledo gave the gun, put the gun, threw the gun behind the fence. We've all seen the video. Stillman, you know, is another one of those guys with a checkered past. Plenty of complaints, disciplinary action, the whole thing. Could he have done a better job? Could he have put one in the leg? I mean, listen, it's hard to say. We're not cops. Tough to say in a situation of that nature. But, you know, again, you have to wonder regarding, again, training. Training is always going to be a very key word when it comes to enforcement. Now, one more before a quick break. And we'll give out the coveted bronze 30. Gentlemen, the red flag stuff. You know, I look at this situation in Indianapolis where, you know, you had it. This Brandon Hall, this is the guy who killed 8 at the FedEx facility. And I look at prosecutors there who, for some reason, did not petition a judge to block Brandon Hall from buying the weaponry after a previous mental health incident, because they didn't think they could convince the court that he had a propensity for violence. So you wonder, with all the red flag laws and everything else, is it preventative? The mother crying out, the fact that, you know, suicide by cop, alerted people, took away the guns, gave him back, and here we go. So you wonder, Charles, as far as what it all means, you know, with red flag laws and everything else, they're supposed to be in place to protect anything but, especially with what happened in Indy. Go ahead.
Can I just say one thing really quick?
Sure.
If there's a domestic incident, in other words, like if husband, wife, whoever in a household are fighting, the first thing they do, the cops come in, they get one of those people out of the house, order protection, they ask, the first question they ask, are there any weapons? They seize the weapon. So that is, and that's for domestic where there's no guns involved. So I don't know what's going on in Indiana and what their red flag law is, but let me tell you something. It was probably watered down, because in New York, the exact opposite happened. So the minute you have a red flag incident, somebody is violent and makes threats, even it doesn't even have to be domestic. They come in the house, order protection, take the guns. No questions asked. End of story. Done. So New York is different, thank God. But whatever was going on in Indiana, those laws have been watered down significantly.
Yeah, and you look at what happened, Steve, even in Parkland years ago with Nicholas Cruz, cops went there 39 times. 39! What happened in those 39 visits? Did they not see weaponry there? The kid was firing off his gun every other day, we were told. Cops were some in there, they did nothing as well. So, you know, you look at these laws and you wonder how flimsy they are. Are they meaningful at all? What's your take?
How much more do you need when the mother is pleading with the police that my son is ill and that he's going to commit, you know, suicide by cop, and then they find out, you know, he's on all these crazy websites and he's really lost. And you know, you talk about laws? I mean, what more do you need when his own mother is the one making the phone call or the one saying he's a sick boy, he needs help, and he could be dangerous? So the red flag law, like Charlie said, gets watered down. People are trying, you know, just to do just enough. But when are we going to get to the point when just enough is not enough and we have to cross the line? So if you see something and you say something, it's supposed to get done. If I saw my neighbor acting crazy, we talked about this a few weeks ago on the show, and we called, I'm putting myself out there. And if they don't take that kid away and get him or her or anybody off the street that could be dangerous to our neighborhood and our civilization, then it's not enough. What else do we have to do? It's not enough. So in this case, 8 people died, and the mother wanted the child taken away to go get help, and it couldn't happen. The law is broken. It all is broken because you can't go any further than a mother calling on a child.
You know, you wonder which side of the fence. NRA says this, you say that. Politicians say one thing. We got to fix these situations in play. The red flag laws. Listen, you go back to the Lansky deal at Newtown, right? Same deal. The kid was mentally deranged. No question. Had issues. Major issues. And, you know, went into the cabinet, took a gun, killed his mother, and went on his merry way to go to the school. Listen, we got to fix this stuff. If they're in play, we got to fix it. We cannot let these things happen. And we know that families, and I always say, guys, it starts in the house, okay? Because whoever resides over the house, over these individuals, see something, say something, and a lot of times it's not being spoken. And on a timely bit, and it's all about timing. We know that. Charles and Steve, they are the smart guys. We give out the coveted bronze 30. We'll get to that right after this. All right, the coveted bronze 30. Everybody loves the bronze 30. For those who have stepped in it, we give out a weekly award, and to no exception this week, with Steven's selection of Alex Borsky, Charlie's was Tucker Carlson. That was a good one. And then mine, you know, it was a frustrating week. I'll be honest, truth be told, last week. And we were kind of all at each other's throats, and I, in disgust, claimed my nominees were my panelists. I wish I could kind of take it back a little, but it was a little too late. Charles and Steve, I'm sorry. Each of you will get the coveted, each one of you, we'll get the coveted bronze 30. It's going to be sent out. I know. Listen, it is what it is. Tucker Carlson was a good one, and he deserved it with his vaccination nonsense. But all in all, Charles and Steve, I don't know if I should say congratulations or I'm sorry, but each of you will receive the coveted bronze 30. Any thoughts on that, Charles, Steve? Go ahead. You may.
You can go first, Charlie. Tell them about the letter.
Oh, yes, Jay, by the way, I want to thank you for the beautiful letter of apology you wrote to the American people. Yes, last week. I know it's going to be in the New York Times. We took out a $50,000 back page ad. I want to thank you for that. It was a very gentlemanly move, and will be appreciated for my generations to come.
I want to thank you very much.
It was the least I could do. Stephen, I don't know whether to say congratulations or, you know, what can I tell you? But the article will speak for itself. The article will speak for itself. So we move on. Gentlemen, the upcoming week, Stephen Schwartz, your nominee, sir.
Well, I could go for Captain Obvious here and go with Waters, but I'm going to – I know that Jay, you are burning to go with that. Just I have a gut feeling. So I am going to go a little bit in the same direction but a little bit off the radar. So I'm going with Reverend Al Sharpton for his whole new persona. Like nothing changes after 50, 40 years, 30 years. He still owes New York a tax of $600,000. He runs a nonprofit organization, but he's taking a private plane down there to sit and be able to hug the Floyd family during this trying time, which is noble and right and good. Except I still believe that Reverend Al always has ulterior motives. Him going on a private jet. You got to see this jet. You got to see the video of him walking like a statesman. Wow. Like this is something really special. I'm not buying the lemonade. I'm not drinking the Reverend Al Sharpton lemonade. And by the way, a lot of people, black, white, green, yellow, gold, are not around New York and around the country, really think that this guy should really still be able to ward so much power with his sword. So he steps in this for me. He's my turd of the week, Reverend Al Sharpton.
Well done, Al Sharpton is Stephen's pick. Charles, yours, sir.
I love that one. I was that actually, Schwartz, without even talking to you about it, he was on my list. The old Reverend Rent-A-Riot. $175 a head, they'll have you burn down an entire city. Just send the buses and the box lunches. He'll have them show up for you. Mine is Marjorie Taylor Greene. Once again, it's my second time I've nominated her. She's a disgrace to Congress. She uses her office as a platform for racism, and she's got to go. I would immediately remove her from any committee she sat on. Her caucus, basically announced to the Ku Klux Klan caucus, is a disgrace. She's a disgrace. And the Republicans, if you ever want to win back my vote, you could say something for, you know, basically for common decency in government. You can start there and get her, then make her sit on the sidelines, put her in the broom closet while you're voting. She doesn't get to do anything. She's a disgrace to politics. And to politicians and anybody who tries to be a civil or a public servant in this country, get rid of her. She's it. Marjorie Taylor Greene, congressman from northern, middle of nowhere, Georgia.
Two good ones, Sharpton and Marjorie Taylor Greene, no question. Now, listen, I could go with the easy one. It's right there. The bullseye is right there for Maxine Waters. It's too easy. Listen, she is such a despicable human being. I don't even know what to say anymore if I want to still stay on the air, to be honest with you. That's how disgusted I am over her, but that's too easy. You know, I got to go back into the confines of the state capitol again, gentlemen, because, you know, I look at New York right now, expanding capacity, museums, zoos, theaters, large indoor arenas next couple of weeks. It's improving the levels and everything else. So I think, what, museums and zoos – they're going to operate at, what, 50% capacity starting Monday, same day, theaters, movie theaters. They'll be able to operate, what, 33%, is it? Yeah, 33% capacity. I look at the large indoor arenas will be allowed to go to 25% capacity, but not until May 19th. The governor said it was timely because the NBA playoffs are going to begin there. But I look at everything else, and then I hear about the coveted Ducks of Long Island, okay, who will operate in and around Memorial Day weekend, and people are pleading with Governor Cuomo to increase the stadium's attendance to 50% capacity, especially if one wants minor league baseball to survive here on Long Island. I look at everything here, okay? I mean, it's almost as if we're dangling a carrot now, okay? We're dangling carrots. Here you go. I'm going to give you a little piece here. I'm going to give you some crumbs here. You know, enough is enough. I have had it with the piecemeal. Okay, enough is enough. And by the way, has anybody forgotten about the feigned venue of the amphitheater in Farmingville? Has anybody forgot? Suffolk County, you listening? Has that been brought up once at all? Instead, I got to hear about the Ducks. Nobody cares about the Ducks. Get the concerts going. Get the venues going. You can, and you can do it safely. So enough of the piecemeal. I'm tired of it. Not to mention, we got scandals happening in nursing homes, sexual allegations, and now we use personnel and aides to help write the coveted book that came out. Remember the book, gentlemen, that came out last October in the middle of a pandemic? Do we remember that? As I'm choking here, the coveted Turdy Award this week. And I don't care what the ramifications are. I'm tired of it. Listen, the piecemeal has to stop. Let these businesses operate. Governor Cuomo, come on. You are the recipient. You are my nominee for doing it as slowly. You are torturing people. 25%, 10%, 20%, 33%. Come on. He is my nominee. And by the way, congratulations to Steve Schwartz. The coveted hoodie is available online, correct? Dumble and everything right. else. Give me a word on that, sir.
We're very excited. We've got the original black, gold, and white, Mr. Dumble hoodie available in small all the way up to double XL. And you know what? It's the truth. Dumb plus humble equals smart. That's the motto.
Very excited. I understand he's going to be the first recipient of the sweatshirt. He told me that yesterday. So he's going to wear it. If he could wear it in the courtroom whenever that opens, he would do that as far as putting it on under a suit. But we'll have to get a visual of that if that's okay. We shall see. Gentlemen, well done. And we will talk again next week. How's that?
Thanks, Jay.